Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Good morning, Father Daniel.
Good morning, Chris. Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
I hear that you just got back from a little trip out to the Wild Wild West.
Yes, I was out in the kind of Ogallala area, but an hour plus away from there in Nebraska, in the middle of nowhere.
Gosh, that's not too far from the hinterlands where I grew up in northern Iowa.
Cattle country, for sure.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of corn and soybeans where I grew up.
I think the only thing that was, there's grass that for cattle, that's it.
Well, I'm sure you had lots of time to reflect and come up with some great topics for us today.
We'll see.
So what are you going to surprise me with today, Chris?
First thing we're going to talk about is this, which I'm sure you're familiar with, the new law signed by the governor of the state of Washington in May.
About breaking the seal of confession.
Right, requiring clergy to violate the confessional seal of confidentiality if they hear about potential child abuse.
Correct.
Failing to break the seal and report suspected abuse carries a penalty of almost a year, 364 days in jail, and a fine as high as $5,000. The Catholic clergy in the state sued, and the Western District of Washington blocked the law with a preliminary injunction in July on the basis that it violates the First Amendment's guarantee of freedom of exercise of religion because it denies priests the confidentiality extended to other professions. That was the basis of their injunction. The state is, it's now in their, the ball's in their court for them to appeal. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, my thoughts is I think the mandated reporter provisions in law are a good thing in general because they do, whether it's a therapist or a psychology person working in the realm of psychology, a priest, a youth minister, they're mandated reporters in most states where if they do have evidence of something that might be child abuse, they need to report it to protect that child. So in general, I think it's a really good provision. I think the problem here is recognizing that there is a total distinction between those professional services that are being rendered to a person and the nature of confession. And I think this is due in large part to the breakdown of an understanding of God and religion and society itself. As we become less of a Christian nation, we don't understand why is it worthwhile to pray for someone. You know, you get these, you know, unfortunately, these shootings that happen in a school and someone says, pray for them. And then the other people are saying, oh, it's stupid to pray for them. What a waste of effort. I mean, not only that,
you get almost a antagonistic negative response when somebody says, pray for them. They're like, what good is that? It's almost they're mocking this response.
And that's just a symptom of deeper underlying reality. So
particularly in a state like Washington State, I mean, that's
one of the most secular states in the entire nation.
The entire Pacific Northwest, the godless Pacific Northwest.
Yep. Almost matched by the godless Northeast, but
right.
and I've spent time in both places and you definitely perceive that in the culture. There's just people look at you like, what's that thing you're wearing around your neck? They don't even recognize that I'm a Catholic priest because they just haven't seen it. So I think it's a symptom of what's going on in a broader way throughout our culture. And understanding the difference between professional services and confession is so vital. Because when I go in and I hear confessions, I'm not there as Father Daniel Brandenburg, you know, born in Iowa, living in Atlanta, you know, just me. I'm there in persona Christi. There's a deeper theological and spiritual reality that's taking place that I'm there representing in the place of Jesus Christ as judge, but also as mercy. And so my role there is not to, to give professional advice, it's to give forgiveness that comes from God. And so until we can recognize that deeper difference, I think we'll still, there's going to be this wrestling match that goes on from a civil perspective. So yes to mandated reporting, no to breaking the seal of confession. We need that to have the confidence that whatever we put before God, and we can receive his forgiveness.
I don't know of an instance where there's been other attempts to violate this confidentiality that the priest, and totally. I don't know that it's ever been successful Do you?
I'm not aware of anyone, but it has been attempted many, many times over. I mean, there's the old Alfred Hitchcock movie. I don't know if you remember I Confess.
No.
It's a great movie, great classic. I encourage you to go out and see it. It's just, all the Alfred Hitchcock movies are great. It's in, usually in black and white. I think there's a colorized version of it. But it's a story about a priest who hears the confession of a murderer. And then the murderer frames the priest as being the one who committed the murder. And the priest can't reveal because he's got the seal of confession. And it, the priest comes out, you know, smelling like roses at the end and is vindicated. But, you don't know throughout the movie. And it's just a great depiction of the importance of the seal of confession and respecting that as a society.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
A study by researchers at UCLA found that oral contraceptives change activity in brain circuits that regulate mood and emotion.
Interesting. When did the study come out?
It's just last week was when I read about it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
The pill, as it's known, the oral contraceptive known as the pill, may subtly rewire women's brains, making them more prone to sadness, irritability, and mood swings.
Hmm.
In the U.S., roughly, according to, I think, the CDC, 30% of women aged 18 to 49 take the pill.
Okay.
Roughly 15% of that same demographic, 18 to 49, are taking antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find any study that shows what the proportion of women overlapping who are both taking contraceptives and antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
In another study published in the Journal of Psychiatric Research that followed 28,000 plus women who induced abortions and 1.2 million women who gave birth in hospitals in Quebec, Canada, between the years of 2006 and 2022, came up with a correlation that the women who had induced abortion were more likely to experience mental conditions than the women who had given birth in terms of hospitalization rates in this particular
quarter. And that's something science has known about for a long time. Actually, when I was in high school, I did a report on this problem of the depression and the difficulties that women go through after abortion. So that's not new. It's just corroborating longstanding information that we have.
Right. And the stats are, quite marked. So the patients who had abortions had more than double the rates for any particular mental disorder,
mm-hmm.
almost four times the hospitalization rate for substance abuse disorders, three times the rate for suicide attempts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a large study. This was 1.2 million.
That's a huge, huge sample size.
Yeah. So combining this study about the effects on the psyche from abortion with the study about the effects on the psyche of the pill, what mm-hmm. are your thoughts?
Well, I think it opens up fascinating avenues for research if people would want to pursue it. I just had a conversation this morning with a gentleman who's working on AI for early detection of cancer. And it was a really fascinating conversation because he says that there are actually insurance companies that don't want that early detection of cancer. There are incentives built into the way that our pharmaceutical industry is set up in the United States, the way the medical system is set up, that are actually deterrent to finding cures for cancer or for finding these real correlations or even causation for certain types of medication because it undermines their business model or their financing source. So I put that caveat with anything that we look at from a scientific standpoint because sometimes people think that, if we can find what hurts people, everyone's going to want to do that. Not necessarily. But it does open up really, really fascinating questions that I think need to be looked at.
Well, and that's why I thought it was interesting. I could not find any study where they did a study of women taking both contraceptives mm-hmm. and then also studying that percentage of women that are on antidepressants.
Yeah. You probably have to do a deeper search with a scientific database and going into research articles. You might find something if you look there. but it definitely is something that should be looked into. Something that I came across in one of the books that I wrote, I don't know if it was my first or second book. I did some research on the connection between the induced abortions and breast cancer. And there's a clear correlation, if not causation, between those two. And that's something that's been silenced in a lot of the medical literature.
As is the clear connection between taking the pill and breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
because it's a hormone treatment,
right.
similar to postmenopausal hormone treatment that they mm-hmm. will undoubtedly tell you causes breast cancer. The folks on one side of the aisle refuse to acknowledge that the pill also,
right.
it's a 25% increased chance
of breast cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of these things, why is it that certain evidence and certain studies are not coming out on this? A lot of it's the financial incentives that are behind it in the pharmaceutical industry. Sometimes too, it's the ideological thing where people say, well, no, you know, contraceptions have given so much more freedom to women and they can do whatever they want. Yeah, but at what cost?
Well, that's what I think. I think it's the ideological tilt to why this information gets suppressed.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that that is a driving factor in a lot of these cases. And I think this is the beauty of where a Catholic faith comes into play, Chris, because as Catholics, we're not afraid of the truth. And we are searching for the truth wherever it comes from. If the data shows this, all right, well, that's the way it is until our expansion of data, our expansion of understanding leads us in a different way. The church has always been on the forefront of science. I mean, even you look today, I mean, what other organization in the world has published the type of documents on ethics in the medical field like the Catholic Church has without going into, repressive dictates? It's giving clear guidelines based on a sound anthropology and philosophy. I think we should be really proud as Catholics about the open-mindedness we have, about the scientific research, and about looking at the truly seeking the good of people and not getting caught up in ideological or financial things which can cloud people's vision.
Well, that's what, I have to shake my head every October when the pink ribbons come out for Breast Cancer Awareness right. Month when I'm watching the NFL and they're dressed in a, pink jersey for mm-hmm. whatever game, because you never hear about this connection
right.
between the pill and breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're always touting breast cancer awareness. I can't think of any other cancer that we're not, the awareness campaigns are not more prominent than right. breast cancer, yet hardly anybody knows the connections.
Well, we're not going into the awareness of what actually causes it.
Right.
And then that's kind of silly, isn't it?
Isn't that what the cancer awareness would be about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, depends. Maybe it's just a virtue signaling campaign. And unfortunately, that oftentimes I think that's what it devolves into. It's like, well, we can gain the sympathy of a lot of women if we say that we're trying to support breast cancer awareness.
All right. Well, how about this angle? This is something I find fascinating.
Uh-oh. What you got here?
All right. So studies also show that women who use the pill when choosing a partner tend to pick men with less masculine features.
Interesting.
In contrast to women who aren't on hormonal contraception, they're more likely to choose partners with traditionally masculine faces. So think women on the pill would be more inclined to choose an Orlando Bloom versus someone who's not would choose a Clint Eastwood.
Right.
They'll show pictures of the same guy, one with a more gruff facial mm-hmm. features, facial hair, and a more gruff look about him, with the guy who's more cleaned up and the hair is cut, the same right. guy, and ask women who are on the pill to choose which partner they would be more inclined, and they choose the one that's the, more cleaned up version versus the more masculine right. looking.
There's related studies to that I've heard about in the past. It was one of a priest that is a good friend of mine who does a lot of marriage prep. He's looked at the effect that the pill has on a woman's sense of smell.
That's right. There's a study that says that women on the pill become more attracted to men whose body odor resembles that odor of supportive relatives.
Interesting.
So basically, being on the pill changes the gene pool.
Well, it's throwing off your perception. It's throwing off your mood swings and your
right. But you're choosing
a
partner
person.
And then potentially mating with a partner that you might not otherwise, and then therefore right. having offspring. So you've changed the gene pool.
Mm-hmm. Right. And perhaps, you know, also jeopardizing your longevity of your marriage, because you're not marrying with compatibility.
Right.
And you're in an altered state and you're choosing someone. That's really problematic.
Right.
Well, and we won't even go into the whole question of how the pill causes weight gain for women.
Okay. I'm not aware of that.
There's a whole nother series of studies that have shown that it causes women to put on more weight. So there's a lot. Chris, there's a lot of reasons why that would dissuade a woman from being on the pill. And I think that's why there's a movement among a lot of younger women who know the scientific data on this to say, you know what? I'm going to go the green way. I'm going to be natural. I'm going to respect the rhythm of my body, how God has created me. And I think this is one of the strongest arguments for NFP, natural family planning. Used in the right way within the context of loving, long-term commitment in marriage. And this is what the church teaches. It's not anti-science. It's not retrograde. It's actually cutting edge. And it's protecting us from all of these negative influences that we see now coming out more and more, and as much as they can, about the scientific reality of the pill.
And like you just mentioned, the rhythm of the body is there for a reason. It's not an inconsequential...
Yeah,
it's not like the length of your fingernails.
And I've talked with women who have, you know, switched from being on the pill and going to natural family planning, and they just say, I feel so much better. They're happier. They're in a better place, and it's better for their marriage. And I had a guy just yesterday actually came up to me and said, Father, my wife and I, we stopped using the pill and condoms. It's like, great, good for you. And they're happier in their marriage. So as people discover the reasons why the church teaches what it does and actually begin to live it, they find usually a lot more fulfillment, happiness, and balance in their lives.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed Wires.
A U.S. district court decided to strike down a 2017 regulation that exempted religious employers from the Obamacare mandate for employer-sponsored health insurance to cover the cost of contraception.
Sure.
A judge from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania found that the first Trump administration's 2017 rule expanding religious exemptions from the contraceptive mandate, that this violated the statutory authority that... And she struck down the rule, this judge.
All right.
So while houses of worship and their, quote, integrated auxiliaries, unquote, were automatically exempted from the mandate, other nonprofit organizations, such as religiously affiliated hospitals, colleges, charities, et cetera, they had to apply for an accommodation to get this exemption.
Right.
So the Order of the Catholic Nuns, known as the Little Sisters of the Poor, did not qualify as an automatic exemption because they are not a church.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to file for the religious accommodation. Even if they were granted the accommodation, the Little Sisters health insurance carrier would still have been required to cover employees' contraception at no cost to the Little Sisters of the Poor, but they still would, their insurance company would still be required to cover it. There's long been this axiom that refers to the, you know, Little Sisters of the Poor in college football, where, you know, it's a reference to college football powerhouses beating up on weakling teams early on.
Right.
Right.
In order to pad their season.
So 12 years after the Little Sisters of the Poor first opened their case, they're being dragged back into court.
Yep.
Okay.
Total bully tactics here.
Yeah. So what? Why can't we stop persecuting the Little Sisters of the Poor?
I don't know, Chris.
The name, the Little Sisters of the Poor.
No kidding. And I've had a chance to actually go to the convent of the Little Sisters of the Poor when I lived in Cincinnati and went to their nursing home. We did missions one year and we brought a bunch of young people to visit the people who were there at the nursing home and saw the sisters and saw the beautiful work that they do. You know, it was a beautiful place. And the care, the love that the sisters put into taking care of the residents, it's just remarkable. You know, very different from other nursing homes that you visit where, you know, people just don't care about them, or there's just they're mistreating the residents, or it smells horribly in the place. So I went to a place here in Atlanta. I won't say where because I don't want to disparage anyone, but it was a nursing home here locally, and it was disgusting. It was old, decrepit. The building was falling apart.
Yeah, that's...
there's no sister, little sisters of the poor taking care of them.
Right.
So, you know, Catholic groups throughout society do a beautiful service to our country, to our people. And to have the country then like slap them in the face and say, no, do it our way, which is the old, I mean, that's horrible. I mean, it's just out of place. And there's a number of things that come into play here, Chris. I think on the one hand, you've got this bully tactic from a government trying to impose something that is morally wrong and making the sisters complicit in that. That's really unconscionable. I mean, to put it in stark terms, if, you know, during World War II, if you had, you know, commandant of a camp recruiting the sisters to come and you know, inject the residents with testing. I mean, taking it to an extreme, but it's just wrong.
Right.
And a sister would have to say, no, I'm not going to inject those shots. And in a similar way, there's a cooperation in evil here that is being forced upon the sisters. And that's why they're resisting. Rightfully so.
Right. But I mean, it just blows my mind that you've got this exemption, which doesn't affect anybody outside of the Little Sisters of the Poor organization, presumably. I mean, the employees, I guess.
It affects a tiny proportion of their female employees.
Right.
Which, if, like in the nursing home that I went to, there were probably, you know, four or five nurses that were of the age of childbearing age that could even benefit from that. The vast majority of their employees were not childbearing age or they're men, so that it doesn't really affect them. So it's, but it's, again, here, I think, Chris, we're seeing an ideological imposition. There's the principle that government can force people to do what they want them to do, number one. And number two is the ideological principle, like, no, you're wrong in your moral stance on this, and we're going to make you do it.
And that's really what's going on here, because it's
totally
the states of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, that are part of this Eastern District, that are choosing to continue over a decade later, after this exemption was ruled by the Supreme Court to be lawful, and we're going to drag them back through and make them spend the money.
Yeah, and what's going to be the end result of this, Chris? Like what happened with Catholic adoption agencies, the government started cracking down and said, no, you have to accept homosexual couples to receive children. It forced a lot of Catholic adoption agencies out of the field.
Right.
And there, I think that there's perhaps a secondary
intent
here.
To no one's benefit.
Of course, to force the sisters, force Catholic organizations out of public service so they can be controlled by the government. And we're moving towards a socialist and, dictated society. I think that's going to be a lot worse for care for people, a lot worse for everyone involved.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crosswires.
Parents in Silicon Valley are paying up to $50,000 for a new genetic testing service that includes promises to screen embryos for IQ. People like Elon Musk are urging the intellectually gifted to multiply, while professional matchmakers are setting up tech execs with high IQs to get offspring with high IQs. They're setting up a matchmaker with, you know, to match high IQ with high IQ.
And then they're going to test these embryos.
So one tech couple have four children through IVF, and they used a company called Heracyte to analyze some of their embryos. The mom, a woman named Simone, said she chose the embryo she is now pregnant with because it had a low reported risk for cancer and because it was in the 99th percentile in likelihood of having an exceptionally high IQ. Thoughts?
That's my response right there. Sorry, Chris. Sometimes these things just, you got to a laugh at the gullibility of people. I mean, is she really that high of IQ that she actually believes these tests?
Yeah. I mean, good point.
I mean, so much of intelligence depends on your early exposure, the type of education you have, its environmental factors that come after the fact. I can look at the siblings in my family. We're eight kids in my family, okay? My oldest sister is a doctor. She's brilliant. She's super smart. I've got a brother who has a lawn care business. Okay, is same gene pool.
Right.
It's same, like...
Well, there's something that they're screening about the embryo that makes it distinguished that they have determined.
But again, so much of that comes through later life experience. Sure. I have met people who came from parents who were very, very, you know, low IQ people who were extremely intelligent because they got a good education and good life experience. And on the flip side, people who are lazy don't apply themselves.
And your nutrition.
Early childhood nutrition is really crucial. There's so many other factors that come into play. This sounds to me, in large part, a money grab from this company that is promising something that they can't really deliver.
Well, doesn't this sound like Aldous Huxley's Brave New World?
To a certain extent, yeah, it does. Yeah.
All right, so... What are your thoughts on genetic screening? Would there be any level of screening that's morally acceptable, assuming that these couples intend to implant all embryos?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Would there be any level of screening that's morally acceptable?
No, that's a great question. Can we do some embryonic screening? I think if the intent is to help for early intervention, yes, it could be morally licit. But if your intent is to detect and kill anyone that's weak or cull the herd, or if whatever terminology you want to use.
That's what's going on here.
That's what's going on to detect, trisomy, what is it? Trisomy 26, I think is what it's called, or 40, the name of it.
Yeah.
But basically, those who have Down syndrome,
right,
in order to abort them,
right,
that's morally problematic to engage in that type of genetic testing. And I can't tell you the number of times, Chris, where I've heard of couples who have done of the pre-embryonic screening of their baby, and the doctor told them, oh, you've got a problem here. And it turns out the baby was born perfectly fine.
My wife and I had two children in our 40s. Both times we got the same responses from doctors, mm-hmm, and I just told my wife, let's stop asking.
Yeah, yeah. It's unfortunate that doctors will engage in that. It's kind of bully tactics to scare people, and it is very problematic. And I know of cases also where, an embryonic screening beforehand allowed doctors to find a problem where the child wasn't going to live very long. And it helped to prepare the parents,
right,
you know, spiritually to receive that child, to rejoice with their life, and be ready to also let them go. So that can also be a beautiful thing.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.